Good evening, Mr.
Well,
Lewis.
Hello, Mr. Bear. How are you this evening?
I'm good.
It's nice and warm out.
Yeah.
Which is not is going to change, apparently. From what I've read, there is the another possibility of a jet stream imbalance, which will cause a polar vortex.
Polar vortex.
To come down. Boom. So.
Oh, got a gusher.
So we'll see if that actually happens or not. That was one of those long-term predictions that you never can be quite so sure about. What are we drinking today?
I didn't have any traditional type pre-show beers. But we did this on the show recently, the old Nebby from East End.
Oh, okay.
So, it's funny. We did it on the show. It was a gusher kind of infected. I'm not going to candy coat it. It wasn't clean, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that stinks. And then I had one on my own. It was pretty clean, pretty good. And then we opened this one, and it started gushing again. So, seems like maybe a little hit and miss on the bottling.
Other than a little bit of Band-Aid, doesn't smell that bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it smells pretty good, actually.
So, who knows? So, we missed last week. That's basically my fault. Oh, hi, Dusty. Dusty's down here.
Dusty!
How you doing?
Up?
Dusty is Jeff's new cat. The little scamp.
Down here looking for mice. Get all the mice. Do it. Kill them.
Mostly kind of my fault because that Saturday I plain old overslept. I was tired and I took a little nap and didn't set my alarm right. I set it for AM instead of PM.
Oh.
And
that's why you just let Siri set the alarm.
Yeah. Well, sometimes when you do that, it doesn't do it right. Sometimes if you say Siri set my alarm for 7:30, she'll just assume 7:30 AM.
Mm.
So, or 6:30 or whatever.
Use military time.
So then it was like, okay, well, let's do it the next day. But there was lots of snow. And then it was, well, okay, let's do it the next day. No, again, snow.
Is there a bunch of batteries like right behind your computer there? I just charged up a bunch.
Then it was, sorry. Then it was, okay, well, what about the next day? No, Jeff has to go in early. And it was, all right, well, at that point, we're so far into the week, let's just wait till next time.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Them's the breaks sometimes.
Them's the breaks.
I've been watching True Detective.
I just heard someone talking about that the other day, saying it's pretty good and
you
should watch it.
It's really quite good. It's a different show than you'd expect out of the... You know, because it seems like it's going to be some sort of detective type show, and the story is about two detectives investigating a case, but that's not what the show is about.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so the show is much more kind of a gothic horror type feel to it, and also a very philosophical feel to it, and it's unclear at this point what the title means.
Okay. And just started? Is it the first season?
No, this is well, the thing is that True Detective is an anthology series. Okay. So every year they're going to have a different, totally different cast. So this year it's Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey are the main guys. But they're doing 8 episodes. They've already shown 5. So
okay.
It's almost over, more or less.
Okay, I'll have to keep an eye out for that.
It's really quite good. I can... send those to you via...
I might be able to. Means. Well, they're HBO, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you might have to send me the older ones.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking about what we've been talking about before, and it occurs to me that everywhere you go, you leave DNA, right? You leave skin, you leave hair, everywhere. I mean, and... The fact of the matter is, we're in a society where we have the technology to be able to pick that up. Everywhere you go, unless you're really, really careful, you're going to leave some evidence that you've gone there. I think we have to take that into consideration when we're talking about how we view the internet as well. We're in that level of internet capability where everywhere you go, you leave some DNA behind. So... what I really want to press out of this is that if you really, really want your privacy, you're going to have to wear gloves. That's the fundamental point of it.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to take extra measures, right? Because if you're just surfing the web in your normal web browser, the ad networks know who you are. Mm-hmm. If they don't know who you are, they know you are a 30-something male who likes beer and enough to market to you. And really, it's who you are you know, in many ways. So, sure, you'd have to definitely take some measures. And there's all kinds of different measures you can take. And depends on how, and again, you're trading convenience for security. You're trading convenience for privacy. Mm-hmm. And you got to find what works for you.
And if you're going to access something that has some sort of public, you know, that you're in a public level of something, then you're going to be much more likely to be able to be tracked than otherwise.
I don't follow exactly.
If you go to a library, let's say, it's going to be a lot easier for people to find your skin laying around if they did a search than if you never went to a library at all.
Okay.
If you go to a public website, it's going to be much easier for people to find that you've gone to a public website than if you use some sort of.
Okay, I get your analogy.
Yeah.
And the biggest difference between the real world and online is much what we were talking about, the NSA and the collection and all this stuff, where in the real world, you can't search 100 billion people or 100 billion instances of people accessing something, right?
Right.
You just can't search that much data. You can't index all the metadata for all the postal mail that's going everywhere, right? It's just too much data. Maybe they can today, but think maybe 10 years ago. Traditionally, you can't index all the postal mail. But online, indexing that same volume of something is trivial, right? And that's something you're going to consider in your analogy, where at the library, you go to the library, you flip through the Anarchist Cookbook, you put it back on the shelf, right? You got some DNA on the book. Someone might find that. But correlating that to your other activities is very, very difficult. Going to the hardware store and buying some fertilizer, mm-hmm. and going to the home improvement store and buying some nails. You know, it's correlating all that stuff in the real world is very difficult.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's not that difficult unless you pay with cash, right? I mean, it's if you take precautions, then it is more difficult. But if you use your credit card, then no, it really isn't that difficult to track you for those sort of things.
Well, we were just talking about physical DNA and fingerprints. But you're getting into electronic payments now, so you're getting closer to the internet.
Well, my point is that just like those biological markers, there are markers that are going to happen once you embrace the larger structure of society.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't just simply wish those away. If you don't want to interact with them, then you have to be very careful about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the point I'm trying to make, which is not that... And it's sort of that it's a genie that can't be rebottled, right? It's a Pandora's box that's been opened, and it can't be closed anymore. Things are trackable now because that's the way the economy works. That's the way that we do things. So if you're going to rail against the fact that things are being tracked, you're never going to get anywhere. But if you make better gloves, then maybe you'll be able to get somewhere. Or if you're careful about what you do, then you'll be able to get somewhere. But that's your real option. Your option is not, let's stop tracking. That's never going to work.
Well, I think there is an option there. It's a difficult one, right? I mean, we still live in a democracy, so you can legislate, you know, something like all browsers must have do not track turned on by default. You know, those kinds of things. And there, you know, there's some of that stuff going through. It's never going to pass because of lobbying and corporations.
Well, that's just browsing. I mean, when you get into payments and you get into those sorts of things,
sure. But you're saying, I just wanted to make the statement.
I'm saying that we leave breadcrumbs of all types everywhere, not just in terms of where we're going on with, but in terms of our payments, in terms of the skin samples that we leave behind. There are so many things now, so many ways to catalog how we're moving, that security cameras and things like that, that it's not really possible to opt out of every single thing. you have to be very, very careful.
Mm-hmm. Right. But again, you're trading privacy for convenience.
Yes.
And you just have to choose where you fall on that, and then most people don't care about the privacy part.
That's true.
Well, you brought that up. You brought up something I wanted to talk about. What was it? It was regarding...
Henry.
It was regarding online privacy or something, but what was it specifically? I'm trying to think. I'm like, oh, I don't have to write this down. I got this, and now I forgot it. Go ahead. I'll think and think and think. I'll interrupt you when I remember it.
Haven't been watching the Olympics at all. Don't care. I think I watched like 15 or 20 minutes of it at one point. I was just like, oh, God, I really don't care. I don't give a shit.
I've been watching it every night, but oh, it's maddening.
The only thing that I've paid any attention to is all the ways NBC is fucking up, like when they made Bodie Miller cry and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And it's like, wow. And I saw your tweet about how the human interest story is just dragging. Yeah, that's one of the things that sickens me, is that they have to do these. They can't just show the sport, right? Mm-hmm. They have to have this 10-minute thing about this one person and all the horrible things they went through, and it's like, just show me the sports. I don't
show
care.
More people. Yeah. Yeah, show the East Russian. Yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah, it's my tweet was, my favorite part of the Olympics is the human interest pieces, said by nobody ever. And oh, just like a special cross-country skiing is like Formula One or NASCAR. It's this long event where the drama and the storyline builds as you're watching it. And NBC just can't handle that. Uh-huh. NBC can't let you watch. And they're only an hour. The races are only 40 minutes to an hour long, depending on the length, you know. They just can't cover the thing for fucking 40 minutes. They cover it for 20 minutes. They go off to figure skating. They come back for the finish.
Right.
You know, it's... Oh, I just want to watch some fucking biathlon. You know? I just want to settle in on a Saturday afternoon with a beer and watch some, you know, Nordic countries ski the shit out of shit.
And it shouldn't be that hard for them to do something like that, because I mean, they already do something like that with golf, right? Golf can last, you know, three hours or so. Mm-hmm. And sure, they cut between different people, but it's the same event.
Right.
Why can't they do that? You know, if that works for a broadcast model, why do you have to keep cutting the figure skating for something that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're prime time. They have a formula, right? It's like, no one has a intention span longer than what they have on Sesame Street, so every 8 minutes we'll go to something new. And yeah, they jump, the jump, the jump, the jump, the jump. They'll show some preliminaries early on. 3 hours later, they'll show you the finals, you know, and I hate it so bad. The online streaming is slightly better, but there was so many ads in the online streams. But then I found if you stream it through a browser with Adblock or something like that, then at least it kills the... Like on YouTube, it kills the ad server that the commercials come from. Mm-hmm. But they still block out the video stream. So you watch this. We'll resume momentarily, you know, static screen for a few minutes. But at least it's not maddening, because the... trying to channel surf the live streams on your mobile app, you got to watch like two commercials every time you change the channel, and it's the same commercial. You know? Yeah. It's like, you know, at least turning on the ad block. And actually, I finally did something this week that I've been wanting to do for well over a year now, and that is set up an ad blocking proxy on my router over there. Because for the browsers on the computers, it's fine, right? Because you have Adblock Plus installed. But on the iPad and stuff, and on the iPhone, whatnot, when you're using on the Wi-Fi, there's no Adblock. So, like, it just sucks. So, finally, it does a DNS, has this huge list of ad servers, and DNS black holes them. So now Heather's iPad surfing is relatively ad-free, and it's relatively easy to implement. Wouldn't be for the average home user. You'd have to have, you know, some knobs to turn on your home router, like I do, to actually implement it this way. But, you know, for the average home user, just put Adblock Plus on each of your devices. Now, if you have a lot of mobile devices... Excuse me.
Bless you.
If you have a lot of mobile devices, then you need to look into something like this, where you do the ad blocking on your router. There's a Kickstarter, which sells a little hardware box that goes in line between your cable modem and your router. And it does the same kind of blocking right there. That would be for the non-technical user to implement. But it's probably very much a passive proxy ad blocking server, just like kind of like what I implemented.
Yeah, I'd highly recommend AdBlock for everybody. I install it on all my browsers. Mm-hmm. I saw it when I install something for like my parents, I put AdBlock on their machine.
Yeah.
I don't view a web with ads. And I know that that's not, this doesn't help websites that, I go to because they make money off of the ads, but I don't really have a good excuse.
If you turned on the ads, what would your click-through rate be?
It would probably be very minimal, although I'm sure there would be one or two that would catch my attention.
Well, on AdBlock Plus, you can always whitelist sites. The ones you want to support, the ones you don't mind seeing their ads, you can always whitelist them, right?
I never do. But it's certainly possible.
Well, if you find a site that you love so much, you could whitelist them.
What are you doing? Dusty, show me your crazy. Dusty was behind you on your chair.
He's a cool cat. What was the whole internet thing I wanted to talk about privacy-wise? Oh, net neutrality.
Oh, yeah.
Completely fucking dead. Have you talked to Damien?
No. Not about this.
He has Fios. And ever since, 3 weeks ago when the appellate court knocked down the FCC rules that, broadband providers can't, shape traffic as they see fit, Comcast and Verizon started throttling Netflix and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
Verizon and Comcast aren't only throttling Netflix. They're throttling just about everything. Damien can't download our product's software at home faster than 1 megabit per second.
Neither could I. He asked me to try.
Oh.
Because that was on...
Who's your provider?
Comcast.
You probably got it at 2 megabits a second.
No, I was getting 64 kilobits a second. It was rough.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh, I didn't see that. Everyone I had tested from Comcast was getting double the speed from the Verizon. But yeah, they're not just throttling Netflix. They're throttling... So our stuff comes down over HTTPS, and Comcast, from what I had watched, they start out fast, and they're like, oh, hold on, buddy, this is a big download. Then they choke it down. Uh-huh. The first, 30 seconds or so, it's flying in at, 8 megabit, and then they choke it down to 2. And, it's insane. The internet's going to be... It makes me so angry,
The news says that they're looking back into it because I think that, obviously I'm a huge supporter of net neutrality, and I think that the fact that they were willing that Comcast and Verizon were just ready to go as soon as this came out kind of is giving the people who are regulars a little bit of pause, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What are we
getting? Well, they're trying to change the game. They got into this whole internet game where, the internet's, when I say free and open, it means freedom and open. You can go anywhere, and everything is relatively equal in accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's how it had to be. Then, these big companies, Comcast and Verizon, started challenging net neutrality and saying that, Netflix is, the big guy in the sites, right? Most of America's internet traffic is Netflix downloads. I forget the exact number, but it's more than 50% of all internet traffic in the United States is Netflix downloads. Mm-hmm. It's insane. And, they're saying that, it's costing us too much. What they say is Netflix is getting an avenue to our customers for free, is what they're saying, right? They're not paying us. It's costing us a lot of money to serve Netflix to our customers, and they're not paying us.
It's only costing the money in a theoretical sense, because the pipe's already laid down.
Yeah, there's a couple ways to look at that. But Netflix is paying their internet providers, right? Mm-hmm. Netflix is paying their internet providers probably a gonzo amount of money.
Sure.
And, now Verizon wants to have a toll gate set up mm-hmm. for stuff that's coming in, and they're still charging their customers for internet.
Right.
They want to change the game. They got into internet knowing that you charge your customer a rate, and they can go wherever they want. Yeah. And now all of a sudden they want to charge people, big companies that are serving their customers money for privilege to serve it to them. Otherwise, you're going to be at a crippled bandwidth rate.
And what happens when the new Netflix or Facebook or whatever comes around and they're not part of this privileged internet? So
they can't pay the Verizon tax so they're not competitive. They can't disrupt Amazon because they can't pay the Verizon tax and they can't have equal accessibility to all the Verizon customers. That's part of it. What makes me so mad. But these companies are just changing the game. They got into this game knowing what the rules were, mm-hmm. and now they're trying to change the rules. And it just makes me so angry because it's just bad for the internet. It's bad for.
I'm in favor of classifying the internet as a public utility. And I know that restricts some things about how it can be served out to people. But I think that would at least give us the ability to say, okay, look, this is something that is necessary. And just like electricity or water, this is something that's necessary for people to have. Mm-hmm. So you can't play around with it like that. The government has to have some control over it.
So here's a question for you. I've been thinking about this a lot, and I don't have my own answer for this one yet. So I don't want to argue about whether it costs Verizon more money or not. Let's just assume for a second it does, okay? Would you, Gregory Wise, rather have to pay more on your Verizon bill, Comcast bill, to keep what you have now unfettered? Or would you rather keep the Comcast bill the same and have to pay Netflix more to get full speed Netflix? Right? So it's either Verizon and Comcast raise the bill for every end user, even though they might not be using Netflix, right? Or they do what they're doing now and Netflix has to pay the Netflix tax and they're not going to eat that. They're going to pass it on to you anyway.
Right.
Where would you rather have that money come from? You know, spread across all of Comcast's user base in your used Comcast bill, or only on the Netflix users in the Netflix bill?
It's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
I know, it's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where would you rather get screwed?
Exactly. Up your butt or in your mouth? Which do you want it? And I don't have an answer.
Okay. I mean, I thought about it. I'm like, what's more fair, right? And I don't know. I mean, I want a free and open internet. I want to buy. I want to buy a bandwidth rate, 20 megabits per second or whatever.
Right.
And I want to get 20 megabits per second to everywhere on the internet, unless that consumer doesn't have 20 megabits of bandwidth to the endpoint. Right. I don't want it throttled by my bandwidth provider. Now, saying that would mean that I should be willing to, again, we're assuming that there is more cost involved in the infrastructure. Saying that means that I am signing on for a bigger internet bill from my internet provider for that free and open internet. If they're not, the thing is it real money or is it the text message, service charge, where it doesn't cost the cellular companies anything for text messages and they charge, $20 a month for texting,
Right. Right. That always bugged me, right? Because text messages is like the least amount of data you could possibly send.
It's not even in the data channel. Yeah. It's on the carrier channel, right? Yeah. So, fucking net neutrality. But yeah, I mean, it's not screwing us yet. None of our customers are going to have Fios or Comcast, right? They're all going to have business class, and these companies aren't screwing with their business customers. They're only screwing with their home customers. Right. So it's not biting us yet, but it was stunning that Damien didn't believe it at first. I'm like, Damien, I'm pretty sure Verizon's throttling you. He's like, no, it can't be. Why would they be throttling a Veer? And I had a bunch of people from home try it, and everyone on Fios and Comcast were throttled, and people on AT&T and other small internets and on Armstrong and Consolidated were all getting like 8 megabit a second downloads, and you were getting 64K, which is about 500 kilobits.
Yeah. It was really slow.
Yeah, you were getting about a half meg. 64KB is 500 kilobits.
Yeah.
So you're getting about a half meg, and
And I didn't go stay on it for too long. I wasn't actually down. I just wanted to see what the speed was.
And everyone who wasn't on the big asshole internet providers were getting much better speeds.
Mm-hmm. No wonder why Damien was so jazzed about, because he sent me a text about, hey, Google Fiber might be coming to Pittsburgh. No wonder why he was so jazzed.
Yeah, Peduto. Bill Peduto, our new mayor. Mr. Accessibility. I mean, accessible, right? I mean, he always was a pretty cool guy. I mean, how do I mean cool? I mean cool as in, you know, he seems to embrace technology. He's very accessible online, embrace social media when he was a city councilman, right? I am very curious to see if the office of the mayor beats him down and he turns into just another mayor, or whether Bill Peduto can still be Bill Peduto after 3 or 4 years.
If you come from some sort of weird dimension where politics does not have an effect on you, then okay, but that's not the way things work.
Yeah. For Bill Peduto, I'm in that, you know, that Obama inauguration, you know, optimism right now. It's like, oh, he's going to change how things are done.
Change the world, man.
He's going to change Pittsburgh, man. He has... Pittsburgh 311 Twitter account. You can Twitter Pittsburgh problems and they'll handle it. Just fucking fixes it. Wakes up Bill Peduto. He gets on the phone. He says, fix this fucking shit. I sent it a tweet.
I was going through some... I made some sort of Twitter rant at... February 20th, 2 days ago.
I saw your brain dump thing, kind of rambly. You need a blog. Put all that in one coherent sentence or one coherent paragraph.
It came because I was playing around with a fossil I have, and I was just sort of thinking about...
Uh-oh.
What now?
Audition has encountered a fatal error. Needs to shut down.
Oh, boy.
6 minutes. Well, we got the backup recording. We missed the very beginning because of the dead battery, right? Huh. Let's see if it recovers.
Do-do-do.
Well, good thing we have a backup recording.
Yes, very good thing we have a backup. Hey, Dusty.
Most of it. Hey, Dustbuster. He's a really... I think he's part dog. He just likes hanging out with people.
Yeah.
You just going to leave now that you checked things out? Everything past your... everything past your inspection?
He's just a curious cat. You know, that happens. Cats are curious.
Come on. I have to reboot here. Audition doesn't look very happy.
Well, while you reboot...
Well, we can just keep talking. Yeah. My father-in-law has a 2008 white MacBook. You know, not the Pros, but the old white MacBooks. And it was running kind of slow and doggy, so needed a new battery. So I got him that. You know, the battery was junk. Upgraded from 1 gig to 4 gigs of RAM and put in an SSD. And the thing fucking flies now. He's like, holy crap, is this good? Because he was thinking about, you know, maybe it was time to buy another computer. But, I mean, he's getting another 5 years out of it with that stuff in it. So that was a really worthwhile upgrade.
So what I first started on was that... does that... We actually have it?
We have the first 6 minutes, yeah. So we'll be able to... Or wait, hold on a second. It says it's 25 minutes. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Okay, I get your analogy.
Yeah. Right, so...
All right, so...
I'll say the first 6 minutes. Stitch it into the Zoom backup recording, and we'll actually have a pre-show.
Yay! So, back to my thing. So, the first thing I said was something which is sort of philosophical and scientific at the same time, which was... the more you understand about something specific, the less you understand about what's around it. And I said, that's Heisenberg in a nutshell. And that really is a very fundamental fact about the universe. And that becomes apparent the more and more you look at different things, that that sort of principle is not just a particle physics principle. It's a principle about, you know, whatever it is you're studying, that the more you focus on something, the less what's around it is clear.
Okay.
And then I went from there on to more philosophical areas, which had to do with disorder and growth and stuff like that. But it all came back to this thing where I was examining this fossil, and it's this fossil of a fish from about 35 to 40 million years ago, you know, a chordate. And it was like, this fish has left behind knowledge, right? This particular fish has left behind, in some sense, knowledge. And most of the fish, nearly all the fish that lived then, didn't. They were eaten, they didn't reproduce right, or, you know, whatever happened didn't work down the lines. But in some way, that fish was not just radiating disorder.
Now,
that
is there a different sort of knowledge? So I get what you're saying. You're saying it has information on how to build a structure that is a successful fish or something like that, right? You can learn that from looking at the fossil.
It's not so much that. It's that it left behind a record of that it existed.
So you said knowledge. I would have said information. What's the difference?
Knowledge would be justified true belief. So justified true information in that sense. Because information could be false. And I could say this glass is empty. That would be information, but it's false.
Okay.
Whereas I'd say this glass has beer in it, that would be knowledge. Because that is justified true belief. You can see, you can experiment on
it. Not to the people listening.
You could say, you right here can...
Well, I can observe. There's observation.
Can observe and do experimentation on.
Right.
If we took a video, that would be an even better proof, not absolute, but certainly even better proof. If we had people came by and test, that would be even better proof.
Mm-hmm.
If you leave behind a fossil, that's a lot of proof that something existed there.
Okay.
That's a damn bit good of evidence.
Okay.
So you're leaving behind something tangible and sound. And so the question then becomes, what do you leave behind? And I don't know how to go much further than that, but I would rather try to leave behind knowledge than just plain old entropy.
Sure, sure. Well, we're making a mark.
in some tiny way.
Wait until some archaeologist finds some Amazon data center somewhere that has craft beer radio stored in it, and they dig it up and listen like, oh my god, these guys are talking about craft beer.
You know what it's going to be? It's going to be very much like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Like the entire future is going to be built around our show.
They'll worship us.
Yeah.
Be gods, and they'll find the tapes, and it'll be like, they actually existed.
They existed. We actually have video of them, and they'll be able to.
And then they will quickly stop worshiping us.
You never know what the future is going to be like.
I'll take big money that it won't be like that.
I would have taken big money that no one would believe a word of what Joseph Smith said.
Touche. Let's start a religion right now. Oh man. Took the kids ice skating twice this week. Ellie got over the hump.
Oh, right? Good.
She got to the point where it's not hard and is now fun.
Yeah.
And so
it's like bike riding, right?
I mean, well, it's exactly like bike riding. As soon as you get a feel for it, gets a lot easier. Yeah. It's not scary. It's not hard. One of the things, this seems so counterintuitive, when you first start ice skating, it seems so slippy and scary and you want to stay right by the boards, right?
Right.
But there's all these people with the most velocity skating right beside you. You know, it's a very high traffic area. If you go out to the center of the ice, it's very serene and calm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, I think it's better out there to mess around. You don't have to keep going in a straight line. You don't have to worry about people coming up behind you. But you don't have anything to hold on to, right? So it's almost, it's counterintuitive.
Well, no, it's kind of like the pool, right? I mean, your main traffic area is on the side. That's where you get in, get mm-hmm. out. That's where you can play, you can grab onto things. But in the middle of the pool, there tends to be, I mean, just by the basis of the angles, that mm-hmm. The situation right. that.
Well, see, but in a pool, the middle of the pool, unless it's, shallow enough that you can stand there, it's a scary, deep place in a lot of pools, right? On a skating rink, you kind of bring your pool scare that it's going to be scary and slippery and deep, but it's not. It's calm and serene, and it's a great place to teach kids how to skate. I don't know. It just seemed very, it was a interesting realization.
As he asked me, it's geometry, right? I mean, you're going to be crowded in those areas where the angles force you to be crowded, and where there are areas where there's not angles forcing you to be crowded, there's going to be less ability to crowd. There's more area there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. But, the only thing is she fell and hit her head 3 times today, so we're going to have to get her a helmet. until she gets better.
Yeah.
But other than that, she's an ice skating kid, which makes me happy. My parents never took me ice skating. It's a lot easier to learn to ice skate when you're 5 and 6 than when you're 15, 16.
Yeah.
I'm better than just barely, but I couldn't even hope to play hockey, I'm kind of in that zone in between where I need a ton more practice to play hockey. But I can go out, get around, and if the ice isn't too rutted, I don't have to worry about falling very much.
I had learned to rollerblade in college, and then I went ice skating, and it didn't take long. I mean, before mm-hmm. that, I had tried ice skating before, and I was no good at it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't take much longer than 4 or 5 minutes for me to figure out, oh, okay, here's how you translate ice skating, rollerblading and ice skating. It took about 10 days or so for me to get to the point where I was comfortable doing small rollerblading things.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think I look at it the same way with the cars. It took me 3 or 4 weeks to get comfortable doing very simple sleight of hand things. But once you get there, the next steps seem to be a little bit less complicated.
One thing I can't figure out why it's so much harder. If I'm turning to the right, I can do crossover steps, both on rollerblades and on ice skates. If I'm turning to the right, I can do crossover steps. If I try to turn to the left, I can't. It doesn't feel right. I can't get my left skate to roll and still do the crossover step. I spent a significant amount of time today trying to figure out why it's so hard and just learning how to do it. And I barely got any better at it today. Oh. I just can't figure out why I can't cross over to the left.
Just keep practicing, and what you'll mm-hmm. find is it's tough. Then one day you'll do it, and it'll be like simple.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not getting frustrated. It's so weird because it feels so natural, and I can just do it to the right, no big deal. I've been able to do it to the right, forever on rollerblades, but to the left, I trip up. My left skate binds up. It's twisted the wrong way. It binds up, and it just stops.
It's not a direct simple comparison, but I can give you a comparison in mm-hmm. terms of the cards. I can do this sort of move, which is a double undercut control very easily, so it looks fine. I mean, if you're really burning my cards, you can sort of see what I'm doing.
But burning your cards?
Burning my hands. Oh, okay. Looking at my hands. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to tell you a story while it's happening, mm-hmm. so I'm trying to keep your eyes on me. So it looks mm-hmm. like I'm doing something fine. But, this sort of thing, very easy for me to do. But then mm-hmm. there's this thing called an in-jog control, which I'm still having trouble getting everything right with.
So when you're doing that one, what are you keeping track of? In the,
so the idea would be, okay, top cards, the king of clubs, let's see if I can do this right. And so I'm trying to do...
You pushed it all in. So what were you... How are you... Okay, so... Can you show me how you're keeping track of that card? I'm sorry, because this isn't a move you have down yet.
Yeah.
But I'm just really curious how you keep track of that card.
Card top. All right. I'll show you the move. I just do... All right, so I'm doing a little bit of this.
Like, right there, I lose it, right? Yeah. Because you push them together.
Yeah. Still working on it. But the idea is this. I have this card. I do what's called in-jog control. The card's still here.
Uh-huh.
I do some things down here.
Right. I mean, you still have the card because it's sticking out the top.
It looks kind of messy. And I come up from behind here.
Oh, okay. So you keep it there.
Keep a break there. And then I do more of this. And I keep that break.
And put it on top.
And I have it right back on top. Okay. That's the idea behind the in-jog.
So is that where you do a lot of your keeping track of cards, on the backside thumb, where you keep a break there or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Most of your control happens with your thumb. And when I do the double undercut, when I do something like that, that's a thumb control. What I'm doing here is, all right, top card. I do a cut like that, put it down like that, and actually you can't see it, but I have...
Yeah, there's a big... gap.
A nice big back. You can't tell I have this back when I'm doing it to you. Nice big cut, and I just do that, pull it right back up to the top. And then I can do like a false cut. That looked like I cut them, I didn't do anything. There's lots of ways to do this sort of control. Mm-hmm. And then you can do, I'm trying to work on this, so you can do things like, all right, pick a card. Just put your finger on a card. So, all right. So that's the card that you've picked, right? Mm-hmm. That's your card. All right. So this is your card, right?
I guess. I didn't see it, right?
Well, that's the card.
Okay.
That's
sure. Okay.
Right? Do you remember it?
Yeah.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't memorized. All right. You're positive?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Let's
Unless you had two cards there.
Let's put your card down. All right. So... That's your card. Now I'm going to do...
I'm not positive the card you showed me and the card you grabbed was the same card.
Well, that's the trick.
Okay.
But the point is, I'm saying to you, okay, so that's your card. And what I'm going to try to do is now the fastest card trick in the world. Have you ever seen this one?
No.
All right. Well, it's a complicated trick. Or it seems complicated.
I see my card.
you saw your card?
I saw my card, yeah.
Oh.
That's not it. When you were shuffling, I saw my card.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the whole point is that I would do something like that, and I would say, okay, put your card back in. Just put it
but
back.
Not look at it, right?
Not look at it, right. Just put your card back in.
How do you, isn't that a red herring? You tell someone to put the card back in, but not look at it?
And then here's your fastest card trick is, there is your card.
No.
No?
No, you messed it up.
I messed it up.
That's okay.
Still working on that one. these things take a while to learn. I have one card trick decent down, and that was not the card trick.
That's okay. I was just curious about some of the mechanics. What was the mechanic you were using to keep track of the card? Because obviously you're keeping track of the card.
Yeah,
right?
that so. In that case, what I was doing was, okay, when you put the card over, I pushed it up.
Right.
And as I brought this back, I had another card here and I put it down. So that was actually... So your card was actually the second card.
Right.
And I would say, this is your card, right?
Mm-hmm.
I put it back and then I say, you were positive, right? And normally people are going to... More normally people are in the flow and they're just going to say, yeah, that's my card. So I say, all right, we'll put that down. But this was actually your card.
Right.
Then I do a control at top, and then while you're not paying attention...
You were a little too careful to not let me see there was a card behind my card.
Yeah.
And it made me realize more so that there was a card behind my card.
Yeah, I still have to work on the performance aspect of it.
Right.
But then while you're not paying attention, I simply do this.
You dirty dick.
And then I just do some, you know, fake shuffling. You put it back in, mm-hmm. and then I just riffle it out, and your card is upside down mm-hmm. on the deck. It's a simple trick.
Mm-hmm.
Gets a good reaction if it's done right. Right. Have not done it right yet. But I was able to do my, you know, the old now you see it, now you don't trick to other people. And it works when I do that.
Okay.
That's the one where they're holding, you've seen it, I showed, you know, did Allison, where they're holding the card. Mm-hmm. And it makes it look like, oh, I messed up, but they're actually holding their card the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a double lift. Nothing spectacular about that.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool.
Where do you see the pass? The pass is the coolest trick because you can do something like... I can't do it right. So, okay, so this is your two of diamonds. And let me... A little bit more cards here. So
it's on top still, right? No, top of your...
Yeah, it's on...
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But like, you know, I'm just going to put this down. Now it's back on top.
That was almost pretty good. I'm serious. I didn't see how you grabbed the bottom deck.
Yeah.
But I did see you put it on top, right? So I didn't. It looked like it kind of. You almost pulled it through the deck, right? It didn't look like it came all the way behind it and over. So you were halfway there because mm-hmm. I couldn't see that part, but I could see you put it on top. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's a cool move. I'm not going to go into mm-hmm. what exactly the move is with you, but it's a cool move that makes it look like I'm just doing something like this, and I'm actually pulling the card at the top.
Yeah, I've been thinking about your card tricks, and I've been thinking about that magician that we saw down at Disney, right? And it actually makes me want to get some shells and practice the shell game, actually.
Well, I can send you some of the videos I've been using to learn.
For some reason, you know, the cards, I mean, it's all the same stuff, I guess, you know, same deception type thing. For some reason, the shell game, I don't know, it seems cooler to me than the card tricks. I don't know, maybe, I'm not sure why. I just think that, you know, with the shell game, you have three shells, right? And the magician does a certain act to direct your eyes to a false shell, which mm-hmm. looks like where the P is, right? I really like the idea of that, right? Where they're really pointing. And some of the card tricks do that too, yeah. right? But I really like how he really controls
where the P is, misdirection.
It is. And then where actually everyone thinks the P is.
Right.
So I really like that part of it.
That's the whole principle of misdirection, which is what mm-hmm. a lot of these are about. Yeah. You know, that's why when you see a performance of this sort of thing, you'll notice that the person doing the magic is always trying to be very personable,
mm-hmm.
comes up with a story, gives a whole story behind it, looks at you in the eye, that sort of thing. Because as long as that's going on, he can do little subtle things mm-hmm. that you can't notice. He's right. misdirecting your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then he shows you something, but what he's showing you is not where the actual action is. What he's showing you is something completely different.
Right.
So as long as you're looking at that, then you don't see the nonsense part of it.
Then there's someone like me who is like, I need to find...
Yeah, you're burning... I'm burning my hands. You're looking directly at everything I'm doing because you know mm-hmm. yeah. I'm doing something silly. And I'm not good enough yet to hide right. that from somebody who's yeah. burning my hands.
Yeah. I mean, but I'm not... I'm not doing it to ruin the guy's magic.
No, no,
I'm doing it to admire his craft. You know, yeah.
No, so. I love it. I mean, the whole thing is, and I, you know, I told this to Dave because I was looking at some stuff on mentalism tricks. I talked about mm-hmm. this before.
Right,
they're so cheesy and so disgustingly simple. I mean, like the ones where somebody can predict a number that somebody else says, and it boils down to, well, they have a fake writing implement on their thumb that they write with. That's it. It's something as cheesy as that. It's all really obvious.
I mean, after the guy reveals the number, he writes it and...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Those are so banal. It bugs the hell out of you. But these there's more of an artistry to them. There's more of... They're more interesting.
Did you go back to that... I know we talked about Radiolab a bunch recently, but the one about the mentalism reading, and the one where they actually made you go online to a special URL to ruin the magic.
I went to that, yeah. And it was... It's a similar... When you realize what they did, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's two envelopes. And so you never know, so...
Right.
They had the information ahead of time. That's all it was.
Right. The... What did you think about all the showmanship they put around not ruining Santa Claus for everyone listening to a science podcast?
Oh, I didn't listen to that part. I did was found the pens.
You didn't listen to the whole? Yeah. Oh, okay. So you didn't listen to the whole lead up to it. You know, it made such a big deal about, you know, you're not going to be satisfied with the result. It's going to ruin magic for you. You know, and for me, it's like, I'm listening to a fucking science podcast. I want you to ruin the magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to know the mentalism. I want to know the card trick. Yeah. I want to appreciate the craft. I don't want to be awestruck by the magic, by the hoax, by the, you know, the, I don't know, just...
Well, I think the problem was, and the reason why I had no problem showing you how those tricks work is because they're kind of cool, the things I was doing. Right. They're interesting. It doesn't bug you when you see how that's done. It's like, okay, you're doing something pretty cool. When you hear about the writing with the little implement on your thumb, that bugs you because that's not cool. That's not taking something, you know, in a different way. That's just doing exactly what you would expect you would do in that circumstance and flowering it up.
Yeah, pretty good at writing without being noticed, though, right? So,
all you have to do is misdirect away from the fact that you're doing it.
Yeah.
So I can sort of understand where, like, you know, when it's mentalism tricks, they don't want you to know because they are banal. They are just obvious.
Right.
Whereas card tricks, they're pretty cool. And I don't have a problem showing you some of these tricks because how they work is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, I'm still pissed at Radiolab for not wanting to ruin Santa Claus for everyone listening to a science podcast.
Well, you know what I think about Radiolab.
Yeah, I know.
That's enough, I think, for right. pre-show.
Sure, sounds good. It's been 50 minutes.
Plus 6 or whatever.
Yep.